All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Big Questions with Big John. I'm your host, Big John, and tonight a very different type of Big Questions. Man, that sounds like an after-school special, doesn't it? A very special episode, right? Like when we were kids. But it really is a very special episode for me. I don't get to do these types of interviews too often, and I regret that. But right here, we've got two fellas that are setting the world on fire in terms of podcasts. Just a slight exaggeration, but they're doing really well. People out there really seem to be responding to their podcasts. I'm talking about our very own buzzer beaters. We've got Eddie Aparicio and Anthony Corral. Now, I'm not going to call him Tuan, and we'll figure out why Tuan gets involved in this in a minute. But before we get to it, let's start out by saying you're listening to The Big Questions right here on grumblingsmedia.com. You can follow us anywhere on social media. Just look for @grumblingsmedia, all one word. We're talking about Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, Gab, Truth Social. We're everywhere. Everywhere you could think of, @grumblingsmedia. Or go to the website, grumblingsmedia.com. Okay, guys, big question. I introduced you very quickly, Eddie Aparicio. He's the gentleman whose beard is almost as white as mine. But now I look at Anthony and I can't figure out who that statement applies to more.
Yeah.
Let's face it, folks. It's three old guys here. Yes. But Eddie and Anthony, let's face it. They know their hoops. They know their basketball. And fellas, what strikes me and a lot of the viewers as particularly engaging about your podcast is it's very obvious. You two are buddies. You go back a long way, and you, that comes across. You're two dudes who understand hoops, but you also, we get the thing, man. You're friends. You know each other for a long time. You go back a while. So, Eddie, why don't you tell us a little bit, how did you guys get started with this whole being interested in hoops? Tell us a little bit about your background on that.
So, Anthony and I met, let me see, I think I was 16, and he was 15 at the time. So we're 1 year apart from each other. We went to rival high schools in San Francisco. I went to St. Ignatius College Preparatory. He went to Sacred Heart, which is now, it was Sacred Heart and Cathedral. It was the two schools, one female and one all male. I went to the all male school, which now is now a co-ed school. It actually became that like 2 years after I left. So,
you hung out with Anthony for the chicks.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah, and vice versa. But you know, the thing is that a chick actually is how we met. So,
oh, okay.
So my girlfriend in high school, it was my second real girlfriend. My second real girlfriend was a friend of Anthony. They went to grade school together, and they were good friends. And I, you know, it's funny that when I was going out with her, I'd always heard about Anthony. And I was like, what's with Anthony? You know, I keep bringing Anthony up, right? Oh, he's a good friend. He has with me. You know, I'm sure you guys would hit it off, this and that. So, you know, we did. We actually hit it off. And, you know, they were just friends. And then, you know, we broke up. And then, but Anthony and I continued a friendship. And, you know, we both play basketball. We're, you know, both pretty good basketball players back in our day. And we also coached basketball together, too. Mm-hmm. We coached a grade school in San Francisco where I went to grade school, Epiphany, in San Francisco. So we used to coach fourth, fifth, sixth, all the way up to eighth grade. And we did it, you know, I don't know, maybe about 3 years, I think, total, almost our whole high school career. And then, you know, then I went away to college, but we maintained our friendship. But you know, what happened is we both got married. He got married before I did. Hmm. And then, you know, we lost contact like you do when you get married, right? And then you have kids, right? So, you know, what happened is that when the Golden State Warriors went to the finals the very first year that they went, right? You know, Anthony and I reached out to Anthony. I'm like, hey, man, this is great. Our team's actually going to go to the freaking finals, you know, because we hadn't really seen it, you know, we saw it when Rick Barry was, you know, in 1975, but we were both like 5 or 6 years old at the time. So we really had no comprehension about hoops, right? So that's how we got connected again. And we're like, hey, let's watch the games together. And then we started doing that. And then we went to each other's houses the first year. And we're both superstitious guys. When you play sports, you're superstitious. Then we started continuing getting together over lunch. And we've been doing it ever since 2015. We've been getting together for lunch since then, once a month, pretty religiously since then. And we talk about nothing but basketball. So when William said, hey, look, you know, it's pretty evident that your knowledge of basketball is pretty vast. And I can't contribute to this. It's William saying it. Do you know somebody who could do this with you? And I'm like, yeah. Oh, let me ask him. So when last time I had lunch with Anthony before we did our podcast, I asked him, hey, I'm doing this podcasting. Would you be interested? And he's like, heck yeah, man. This is something we already do anyway. So let's just make it work. So that's how it all went about. That's how me and Anthony. Anthony, you want to add anything? Go for it, bro.
Yeah, Anthony, tell us, man. Is she shooting it straight or something else went on?
No. That's about straight. The girl that I went to grammar school with, we were friends since sixth grade, and then she kept telling me about this guy, Eddie. And, you know, I started kind of hanging out with him, and then she came and went, and Eddie and I continued friends for many, many years. A lot of good stories about hanging out at Eddie's house when I was young. It's all good.
On
the up and up. Everything he said is accurate.
And you guys coached, right? You said you coached grade school?
Yep. Yeah. We coached grade school.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. I actually also coached my daughter's teams when they got old enough in grammar school. I coached them as well. So,
a lot of coaching.
So it's not just that you guys are watching hoops on TV, which is good enough, you know, but you're also you're getting into the X's and O's, even though it's a grade school level, grammar school level,
right?
Like, it's funny because, you know, people tend to poo-poo that. You know what I mean? They're like, it's just kids running around. You know, are you really getting into the X's? So I know you do. And it's the training and the discipline. And aside from being coaches on the court, you're also coaches off the court a lot of times. So I know that. Tell me, I don't know, Anthony, tell me a little bit about your coaching experiences. Like, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, you know, for me, it was simple. I played, you know, nowadays, I think when kids play sports, they tend to play like AAU clubs and they tend to just stick with one sport. When I was growing up, every year we'd play baseball, soccer, and basketball, you know, and so that rotated. And, you know, the thing about me, the thing that stuck with me was everything I learned of how to get along with people, everything I learned about teamwork, everything I learned on how to succeed came from those early years of sports, you know, because you don't win by yourself. And you learn that in sports, you gotta work with people, you gotta get along, and so that's really what kind of got me going with the kids that I was coaching. And you know, I had a one golden rule every year that I coached when I was coaching on my own. Every year I coached, I said, kids, do you wanna win, or do you wanna have fun, or is that the same thing to you, right? Mm-hmm. Because to me, I catered the experience because there's some kids that don't really, you know, like I was pretty competitive. So I don't care what happened. I don't care how many laps I'm doing. I don't care how many, you know, lines I was running. None of that. If we didn't win, I was unhappy, right? But there's some kids where, you know, if you make them work too hard, they're not happy whether you win or lose. So you got to identify your team, what kind of team you're going to have moving forward. And so that was the thing. I would every year, unfortunately, most years I would have pretty competitive kids. So we could kind of, they would give me the permission to kind of press them and push them and make them go a little bit further. So that's kind of where I got into my coaching. That's kind of what inspired me to coach.
Cool. Anthony, how about you? Eddie, I'm sorry. How about you?
You know, as far as like the coaching philosophy, you mean, or just how I
went about coaching? Yeah. How did you approach your coaching? Did you enjoy your time coaching?
Oh, yeah, yeah. For sure. You know, I coached on my own a few years, and then Anthony and I did, more than 3 years, I think. And then I also coached when I was in college, too. So, you know, I have a wide array of experience with respect to coaching. And with, you know, the younger they are, you kind of want to make it more of a playful thing, but you also want to teach them the fundamentals, right? I can tell you confidently, though, I coached, you know, in today's, age of the kids versus, you know, back then, you know, the age of the kids right now is participation trophies. It's different, man, you know. You can't necessarily create as competitive an environment when we were doing it earlier, right? We actually made it very competitive because, you know, we want kids to have an edge, right? Part of, you know, being, you know, into sports. You want to have a way to create that spirit, that competitive drive, right? That's there. And, you know, the younger they are, they don't really have it, but you can show them that, you know? So much like Anthony, you know, with the way he did it is that, you know, he said, you know, fun and learning, you know, and winning is pretty much, you can make it the same thing if you do it right. Right. And if you look at even the pros right now, you know, you can see that the teams that really enjoy each other and have fun, they're the ones who actually do really, really well. So there's something to that, right? So I definitely try to do that, just like Anthony, you know, was because they're young, right? As you get older, you definitely want to teach them a little bit more, you know, zone, man-to-man, you know, defensive principles. There's a lot of stuff in basketball. And it evolved. I mean, it's evolved a lot more than when we were doing it, right? I mean, then, you know, taking a shot from 20 to 30 feet, it was like, what the hell are you doing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now it's the norm, right? So, you know, it's different. So
I still can't get over that because, and I have to, but, you know, when I watch modern hoops, like, all right, so I'm going to throw a name at you, and I'm pretty sure you'll recognize it. But when I was in the 7th, 8th grade, my school basketball coach was somebody who eventually made it to the college ranks. I'm not sure if he made it to the NBA as a coach, but his name was Steve Lapis. And
Steve what was it again?
Steve Lapis. And he was the coach for Villanova, I think, he sat on Massimino's bench, assistant coach for a while. And then I think he coached Villanova for a while. But, you know, he made it. And for us, he was like, oh, man. And he was coming back to where he went to grade school, you know, and he was coaching and everything. And man, back then, for 7th and 8th graders, he made most of us cry, man. He was like the type of coach, he didn't care about being nice or anything. And it was like, you know, I remember I put up a shot from the key once and he was just like, look at you. You can't get off the ground. Why are you shooting from there? Big guy like you has to drive the hoop, but use your body. Yeah. I'm only putting you in for 6 fouls. You know, this is a 7th, 8th grader, you know, and I'm like, oh, man, you know, I'm only good for hacking people, you know, the Shaq-a hack back then, you know, Hack-a-Shaq rather. So, but I think sometimes in today's world, we underestimate the value of a coach and how a coach, along with the parents, can help formulate. Like,
and shape it.
Yeah, people for life, you know, just like in some ways the military does when you're a little bit older, like say when you get out of high school, if you're 18, 19, and you sign up for the army or, you know, the armed services, you know, you could say, oh, that's a life defining experience for you. You'll learn one way or another, it's going to define how you are as an adult. Right.
Right.
And I think sports used to do that. I don't know if it's still the case, though, because like you said, Eddie, a lot of it might be participation trophies now.
Right.
A lot of it might even be, let's try not to hurt anyone's feelings. We can't push the kids, so to speak. I'm not talking about physical abuse, but like push them into like, you're fighting for your spot. You want playing time. And this is how you do things the right way. Right. And this is why you learn fundamentals. Honestly, I see that in today's workforce, like the younger workforce. I don't want to say millennials, that's hack, but I'm just saying like people who might be in their 30s now, 35 right now, I don't see that in them. Like the sense of the locker room, the sense of the camaraderie, you used to see that in business. You know, like when I was coming up, you get to the business world, you work in a big corporation, you start to see elements of sports teams, right? Like, who's my go-to? Are we pushing each other to get to a goal? You know, do we celebrate together? Is it team instead of I? And I don't see that anymore. What do you guys think? Like, do you guys see that on the coaching, even like kid level now? If you have like your own children, if they're in sports, how do you see them getting coached up nowadays, if at all?
Well, you know, you touch on something that for me at least is quite interesting. You know, part of my experience growing up, part of me getting coached, part of that whole was people riding you, people making fun of you. And, you know, I grew up in a very diverse grammar school. So we made fun of each other, depending what our race was, depending what we, big, fat, tall, skinny, whatever. But it was all done from a place of love. It was all done, you know, you did it to the people that were closest to you. And what I sense is that type of environment also made you close. It made you honest. You know, people didn't have to kind of think. I don't remember ever growing up thinking I'm going to hurt that person's feelings. Like, I don't remember that thought being in me, but I do feel like now that's a big thought process on the youth. Like, hey, you can't do that. You're going to, you can't call them out, or you can't tell them this, or you can't tell them that. And I understand. I mean, I'm sure there's kids that I grew up with that maybe were picked on a little more and that they're resentful for that. I wasn't in that particular circle, and I never thought I was doing that type of damage, but I'm sure we could gather some people and they might have that perspective. But to me, that's kind of the trade-off, right? When you start lightly stepping around people, there's something you give up. There's a closeness, yeah. There's a camaraderie that you give up in that element that I think that's what you're speaking to. Because now when I was, plus a lot of work from home now, it's just everyone's so siloed.
Yeah.
It just makes it really, it makes it really hard to kind of bond. And then even when you do bond, you're like, well, can I say this or can I say that or can I be this or can I, and so those type of things kind of go through my mind, and it seems more challenging to get close because there's all these obstacles about what you can and can't say.
Yeah, and some of it, John, I'll just to chime in, because, as Anthony was talking about this, and by the way, it's hard for me to call him Anthony. I'm going to call him Tuan. It's like it conjured up some memories for me, I would say that, Tuan lives in suburbans now, a suburban neighborhood. I live in a suburban neighborhood. I definitely see a difference in the kids in suburban areas versus, Tuan and I are city kids. And in city, it forces you to grow up quick. You develop street smarts. I mean, there are a lot of times me and Tuan went to just go to like the local gyms in San Francisco, pick up games with whoever, right? You don't know anybody, right? But you learn to kind of function in a very diverse environment, and it helps shape a little bit of how we are, right? So it's definitely being city kids definitely shaped us more than anything. I think it forced us to grow up. We didn't have that, hurting feelings kind of thing. You either had to man up or you just, you're just going to get your ass kicked, right? You had to figure it out. So it's different, and over here, I see these kids now. It's like, man, it's like, what are they being taught? It's like, I'm tripping off the kids these days. They have they don't have the same competitive spirit collectively like we did back in the day.
I agree with you. And it's also one of those things that you kind of, I've said this before on other, some of my other shows, but I really believe this. I'm not one of those guys that says, oh man, the good old days were so much better than that. Nah, man. Every year that goes by, life gets better for a whole lot of people. And I really believe that. I may not seem it, but I'm an optimist, man. We're inventing stuff. The rate of scientific knowledge is doubling every 2 years or so, something like that, something incredible like that. The standard of living of all of us has gone up compared to 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. But the one thing that has changed is that toughness you're talking about. Maybe that's the way society's meant to evolve. I don't know. But what's interesting to me is, to you guys' point, if you look at the generations now, they're soft. And I'm not talking about getting into fights, but like you said, the mental toughness, the toughness of spirit, to persevere, to suffer. Resilience and to get over it, right? Because right now I see it, unfortunately, I see it in my niece and nephews. I see it in friends' kids that I've known. That expectation, like when I grew up, my father, my coaches told me, man, you're going to have to suffer until you get to where you're going to be. And by suffer, resilience, put up with setbacks. What happens when you fail? Are you going to pick yourself up? Or are you going to sit there and cry? How do you respond to adversity? And I think now I don't see too much of it. And it kind of makes me wonder, does it make you ripe for the picking? Because if there's 100 kids in a room and 99 of them are soft like that, but there's the one kid who still remembers how to be a tiger.
Yeah.
That one kid is going to run through the other 99, right? It becomes a lot easier, right? So to me, that's a potential danger. And it's interesting that you guys saw it too, and that you see it as well. Mm-hmm. When you see that now, how does that translate? And I'm jumping around a little bit, but I think I'll go with the flow here. How do you see that translating to the NBA game now, or to the college game? Like, do you see those traits, those lack of overcoming adversity? Look, Kobe Bryant, well known for his work ethic, right? That he was in the gym the whole time and he never left. He was the first one there, the last one gone. He would scream at teammates that weren't keeping up with him. And people think that's some sort of awesome. But you know what? Back in Bird's day, back in Magic's day, back in Moses' day or Wilt's day, that's what all of them did.
Yeah.
You know, like with Kobe, he was singular in his generation. But go back even one or two generations, all those guys did that. That was expected of you. Like, if you talk to people who are like vendors at the old Boston Garden, they tell you, we'd come up there to set up the hot dog stands. Bird was in there taking threes, you know, from everywhere, off of 1 foot, off behind his, whatever he could do, right? Same thing with Magic, same thing with Kareem. So do you think, how does that translate to today's game, do you think? This lack of perseverance, this lack of overcoming adversity. Where do you see it most evident, if at all?
Well,
you
know,
go ahead, Twan.
Yeah, for me, I see it in players trying to dictate their situation as opposed to back in the day, the player made the most of whatever cards they were dealt. You know, I'll see players in terms of, hey, I need to take a rest day. I've played too many games. Hey, I'll go to your team if you get A, B, and C, and then I'll go. Hey, I'm not going to sign a long contract. I'm only going to sign a year-to-year contract so that I can hold you hostage in terms of what kind of team you're building for me. Like those type of things is where I see it is today's players. They, you know, we could argue that they are the talent. They're the reasons people go. But at some point when they have too much of that collective power, I think it impacts the product. And so in that sense, that's where I see it. You know, I think in terms of skill, in terms of, I mean, you look at guys like LeBron and you look at guys like Steph Curry, you know, they're deep into their 30s and they're still playing very active. They've taken care of themselves. So one could argue that taking days off and doing what they do, you know, elongates their career. But back in the day, I don't think they cared. They played for today. They threw everything they had, you know, their bodies and everything at the certain game they were in or at that particular championship run or whatever. So that's kind of where I see it, where it is a little different. It is a little bit of today's player. I don't want to use the word spoiled, but privileged, you know, in the sense that they control their situation and they know it.
So, Anthony, we're not going to see Willis Reed come out game seven limping anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's an exception here or there, you know, but no, I don't think, you know, you'll see a superstar, you know, try to risk their career for a game, even if it's a playoff game or a championship game. No, I don't think you'll see it anymore.
Well, the closest Willis Reed moment we had is with Klay Thompson when he messed up his knee trying to go for a dunk and Danny Green tried to block it and he came down and we find out later he tore his ACL. He tried to come back in the game, shoot free throws, go back and D, and he came out of the locker room to do that. Yeah. And for a lot of people, that's when a lot of people said, damn, dude, Klay is like my favorite Warrior. That is freaking awesome, right?
So that's where he won me over.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. It won a lot of people over, right?
But you could see how you guys reacted to that, right? Like, You're like, look at this dude, man. He's a team guy. He's gutting it out. And you're right. Maybe he screwed up his career like that. You know, he's running a risk.
Right.
But we don't remember the guys who took the day off.
Right.
We remember
right,
the guys who crawled onto the field. Yeah. So, or onto the court. And you're right. That does have a certain legend around it. Like, look, people remember Willis coming out in that, but do people remember what he actually did? Not much of anything.
No.
Not much of anything, right? But it got his teammates going, right? His teammates picked him up when they saw him come back on the court, and it picked up their game. I think Willis had like 4 points that game, right? So it's not like he, and he didn't play that much either. It was just the sight of him when they told him this guy's basically crippled and he showed up. He said, my appearance is going to pull people through, right? You see it in other sports too, but like in basketball, that's the one that sticks out in my mind. 6-year-old Big John watching Willis Reed come back on the court. So,
being in the left coast, you know, we wouldn't have even known who Willis Reed was if it wasn't for that particular moment in time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's how we even know who he is, you know?
Yeah. And they were playing the Lakers in that championship game. Yeah. So it was out in LA, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Okay, great. So, that's how you guys sort of met. You bonded around coaching and stuff, and you're moving on in your careers. Now, as you're progressing in your careers, you've had other diversions, right? Like you do what you do to earn a living, back and forth. Did you guys keep in touch? And did your love of hoops continue like through all these years? Like you said, you met for lunch every day or almost every day.
Once a month.
Once a month, since 2014, once they started the run.
Yep.
Once they started the run.
Yep.
Yeah. So, like, were you guys constantly, like, talking hoops? And what kind of that? Was it strictly Warriors, or did you look at the whole NBA? Were you playing fantasy basketball, for example? What was going on?
You talking about, like, before getting together or as we got together?
You know, since, like, you started getting together once a month. Yeah.
So, you know, we got together primarily because of the Warriors. I mean, we're both diehard Warrior fans, big time. And that was always kind of the main conversation piece when we get together for lunch. We talk about, you know, the other Bay Area teams here and there, but it's not as, you know, passionate as the Warriors, because I think Tuan's favorite sport is basketball and my favorite sport is basketball. That was a natural, you know, progression that the Warriors, we're going to talk about the Warriors. So,
right.
You know, that's kind of how it went about. That's how we got, you know, back into our friendship, is when the time when our team actually made it finally there, right? In our adult lives, because like I said, 1975, we were too young. You know, Rick Barry, we saw him underhand and that's all we remember. But other than that, you know, we had no concept of really basketball. You know, we just saw basketball, but we had no idea what that game really was until, you know, now when the, you know, Warriors got to their first championship, you know, it was a bigger appreciation. So it was just two old, longtime friends that kind of lost touch, and the Warriors kind of brought us back, you know, to kind of start talking again. And we've been talking very frequently ever since. He's done fantasy football drafts for guys in my league. Right. You know, a lot of the guys in my league remember Tuan from high school, because a lot of the guys in my league are from St. Ignatius. I don't think we have any Sacred Heart guys in my league. Sorry, Tuan. Except for, you know, you're next on the list, Tuan. When someone, like, you know, comes out of the league, you're going to fill that spot, and you're next on the list. But yeah, so that's kind of like basketball is what kind of brought us back together, and it continues. You know, now that we're doing this podcast together, you know, I think you're seeing some of that. You know, our passion about, you know, especially the Warriors, but we're both basketball fans. We're both basketball junkies, and it comes out, right? And we're hoping the audience enjoys that.
And well, you know, start, John, for me, one thing that bonds me in these moments is that because of the length of time I've known Eddie, he and I suffered together.
Yeah.
And so that, when they traded Chris Webber, when Latrell Sprewell choked PJ Carlissimo, all of those situations. And so when the reward was coming, there's no one more you want to celebrate it with than with the person you know has suffered equally as long as you have. I mean, Warriors fans now, especially, you know, if you're like 20 or younger, I mean, they don't know what it was like. They don't know seasons where you're winning 20 games and just hopeless draft pick after hopeless draft pick. I mean, I don't even know if a lot of Warrior fans know who Chris Cohan is, you know, the miserable owner before Lacob and like how horrible that was. So to me, that particular closeness is where me and Eddie could talk about the old players and, you know, in a morbid sort of way, I kind of miss those times. You know, I miss like part of the fun was building, like, how can we build this to be great? How can we do this?
Right.
You know, who do we need to move? Who do we now, you know, we can do it, but it's like, how do we keep it? You know, how do we not lose it? You know, it's more of a conversation.
And that's a different mentality, right? That's a different mentality. It's like now that we're on top, it's weird. Like we got here, we got to stay here, but now, oh man, I see the decline. I see us starting to come down. Yes. And that's a different type of commiseration that you guys now have, right? Like how is the dynasty coming to an end? Is it over?
And that's going to be the topic of our upcoming podcast. Our next podcast is going to be dedicated to the Warriors primarily. We're going to talk a little bit about Draymond and also about the Warriors, what they should do this offseason. We're probably only going to have time to cover those two topics because I think we're going to delve deep into it and cover a lot of the stuff that we're just talking about right now. You know, what we've kind of experienced as Warrior fans all these years. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, when I watched that first championship game, they actually won it and they won it when we were watching it at Tuan's house, man. I had a moment, man. I got to admit, I went to the freaking bathroom. I'm like, holy shit. I can't believe I actually just experienced my team. Who was the laughing stock for years for the NBA of being like this what are these guys doing? Small ball, you know, come on, this is not going to work. And now it's kind of like the thing now, right? Small ball.
Right.
It was the thing, you know, when, the current composition of the Warriors kind of brought that back a little bit. And then everybody started trying to copy it now. And now you're seeing, you know, the age of our star players. It's showing, right? And they just need to make up the team differently than they have before. And they just have to come, you know, just win differently than they had before. So, yeah. So we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. And again, for people who haven't tuned into Buzzer Beaters yet, you really should, because I like the format of that show. First of all, the camaraderie between these two guys really comes through. I've said that from the beginning, from when you guys did your first demo show for us. I said, like, you could tell you two guys are friends. You know what you're talking about. You feel like you could say anything to each other. That comes through. And I think that's very authentic. But the other thing about your format that I like is it is very conversational. So you only cover 2 to 3 topics per podcast, and you talk your way through it. You throw in stats where you have to, but it's not a nerd show.
Right.
But at the same time, you're learning something. And I think it's quite enjoyable. You know, people can tune in. They can consume it in parts, like one of your segments at a time is perfect, right?
Right.
You know, 15, 20 minutes, you're going into one topic. You're going over whether it's rookies or the draft or the playoffs or March Madness or whatever. And I like that format personally. It's very conversational. I like that. So definitely people should check you out. Buzzer Beaters on Grumblings Media. Definitely check these guys out. Now, when you guys talk to me a little bit about how you prepare for your show, like, do you guys get together? Like, so the people know your show is typically released every Wednesday, usually Wednesday, depending on where you are in the country. If you checked around noon, whichever time zone you're in, you'll usually find the newest episode every Wednesday. And you know, you're only 3 episodes in. I definitely see a lot of people saying, oh, okay, we're going to tune in. We're going to catch these guys, you know, and you have good viewership throughout the week. So what's your process when you two guys, like, do you still get together for ramen and say, let's talk about the show? Is it that you guys work independently and kind of blend it together? Tell me a little bit about, give us some inside baseball, as it were, when it comes to podcast preparation.
Well, I'll tell you this, man. We haven't had ramen since the last Warrior Championship run, man, just because, man, we got ramened out, man. We were eating ramen every other day, right? And the salt intake for the week.
I'm still shaking the sodium off of me.
Oh, my God, man. I mean, I remember, Twan, you were struggling through so much.
Like, and Eddie's like, you got to eat it all. You got to eat it all.
He was getting sweats. No more.
Anyway. Hey, ramen.
But anyway, so to answer your question, John, sorry, I just dropped my phone. That was the noise there. But we, you know, because Twan and I have, you know, day jobs, right? We would love to be able to put a lot more, you know, time and analysis and reading up a bunch of articles. I mean, we do that already, but we would take it just a whole other level if we had the time to do it, right? So because of that, we actually, you know, we structured the show in a way where he's going to pick 2 topics, I pick 2 topics, and we host each other's topics. You know, we do our own research. You know, we send the topics, you know, a day in advance, and we do some research. But a lot of this stuff is just knowledge that we already have, right? Because of our years of just being NBA fans, right? And the other thing that, you know, you touch upon the conversational aspect of the show. You know, Twan and I are very avid sports talk listeners. And because of that, you know, I mean, honestly, man, we tune in. There's some shows that we tune in here. And local Bay Area sports coverage is really good, man. It's always been very, very good. And just I'm in awe of how they interact. And I wanted to kind of bring that same element here because I think people like that. And I, for myself, and Twan can probably speak for himself, there are a couple shows I don't care about what they say or the stats, this and that. I can give a crap, honestly, man. I love their interaction. I love how they challenge each other. I love this, you know, one guy's kind of like the grumpy guy. The other one's happy, you know, and I would say I'm kind of the happy one, and probably Twan's not grumpy, but he's just a little bit more realistic. I'm more the optimist. So it's kind of like, it just comes out, right? It's right. And that's what we wanted to bring is a more conversational thing, because people, I think, enjoy the dynamic of a conversation more than just the content of the conversation. I mean, the content matters, but not just like to be so OCD about information about this, you know, what you're talking about. I'm not that style. I could do it, but it's not my style. And then you'd see me struggle being as conversational as I am if I had to be doing that all the time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And just to carry on, I think in terms of preparation, two things. Obviously, Eddie and I have known each other a long time, and he touched on it. You know, I'm more of a pessimist. He's more of an optimist. But the beauty of our relationship, I think, is that we have a lot of respect for our own perspective, right? Like, I'm not always like, hey, Eddie, stop looking at the sun all the time. Like, it's too sunny. And he's never like, hey, you know, Tuan, stop being so dark, you know, kind of deal. We respect each other, and it manages to balance itself out in our conversations.
And it definitely comes across, man. Like I said, I think, you know, there's different types of shows, and I love lots of different formats, you know, but I think to me, the most favorite one I have is that conversational format, like where you talk like real people, you exchange ideas, you know, and, you know, you keep people entertained, you try to inform them. So, you know, like what I said before about it being a nerd format, hey man, I did fantasy sports radio on Sirius XM for a year. It was all nerd talk. All right. Yeah. It was all, you know, so I'm not putting it down. Don't get me wrong. It was a great experience for me. But if I'm listening to a podcast, I want to hear about personality, man. I want to hear about personal experiences. I want to hear, you know, like, I love, you know, when you guys, you know, folks, if you haven't heard it, you tune into Buzzer Beaters, you find out something new about these guys in the course of their conversation, you know, like Eddie ripped off Tuan's burritos one day in his house, or was it the other way around? Which one was it?
It was tacos.
Tacos. There you go.
The tacos. Yeah.
So, you know, and then now we're finding out a girl is somebody who got them together, right? That's what I'm saying, man. You listen to Buzzer Beaters, you find something new out about these dudes every episode, man. And as a listener, I can't ask for anything more, right? I don't hear about Stephen A. Smith's background when he's on ESPN talking hoops, right? So listen, there's room for all of this type of talk, man. I'm not putting any of that down, but I like you guys specifically for that. And I think the fact that you guys have gotten off to a good start with your episodes speaks to that. I think people tuned in, they didn't know you from Adam. All of a sudden they're coming back, you know, because you guys, you know, hold their interest. And that's why I wanted to get you on here and talk to you a little bit about that. Find out about your, you know, how you guys are as a duo, you know. Right now, let me ask you this. As you guys are going forward, you're working on the Buzzer Beaters. Do you guys see yourselves building this out a little more? Maybe doing a little live streaming, seeing if you could get fans involved, you know, call in questions or leaving comments for you to answer, addressing topics on the cuff like that. Do you guys see any of that like going forward?
Well, for me, I've focused on one thing in particular. So for those people that don't know, these three episodes or four episodes are the only podcast I've ever done. So I'm not experienced by any means. But one thing that I've told Eddie is I can get pretty animated. I can get pretty, and I find myself, at least right now, still remembering the cameras on me and kind of containing myself a little bit, you know. I want to get to the point where I forget it's there and I'm just, you know, I'm 100% Tuan, you know, just
absolutely
going at this and going at that. So that is for me personally something. I do, you know, you brought up a good point. I mean, I got a lot of stories about growing up with Eddie. There's all kinds of things that we could bring up and talk about. That would be good. And then, you know, I'd like to just talk more about the personalities in sports, you know, the different players, the soft science is what I call it, because I really, really get into that. You know, why is so-and-so like this or so-and-so like that? Or, you know, why is, you know, Clay my favorite player? And, you know, he replaced Chris Mullins. And why was Chris Mullin my favorite player? You know, and there's reasons for this. And there's things that happened when I was growing up that made me close to these personalities, these players, even though I don't know them. One other little thing about me that, you know, I'm not an autograph guy. Like, I'll see, you know, I've seen Ronnie Lott out. I've seen Charles Haley. I don't go hunt them down. I let them be, let them enjoy their life, let them do, you know. But I do enjoy their presence when it comes to the sports that I watch. and things like that. So to me, those are some of the things that I'm working on personally. In terms of the show, I think we'll evolve. You know, there's the Olympics are coming. So I know we're going to have a lot of talk about that. The draft is going to come. We're going to have a lot of talk about that, you know, so there'll be things that all year long, you know, the summer league in Vegas and who are the new guys are. It's, I mean, basketball, unlike when we were growing up, basketball's become an everyday conversation.
Yes, year round.
You know,
all year round.
When we were growing up, you'd be like, see you later. See you in 5 months. You know, don't hear anything from anybody.
Yep. I think most sports have gotten to that point. Football's year-round now. Basketball's year-round. Not so much baseball. You would think baseball, but it's having trouble doing that year-round thing, but at least in my consciousness. But that's cool. I love to hear that. And listen, as you tell those stories, remember, statute of limitations. Don't say anything that hasn't expired. We don't want to get Eddie in trouble, man.
No worries, man. I definitely am going to share a story at some point in a podcast where I actually met Gary Payton, the big trash talker of the NBA. I'll save that for a future podcast. But I actually called in the radio station and told the story about my interaction with them, and they actually got a kick of what that conversation was about. So I'll share that in a future podcast.
Yeah.
I'll also share that I actually went to San Luis Obispo, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, at the same time that Chuck Liddell was there. And I had an interaction with him that it's an interesting story that I'll tell on a future podcast. So
hope you didn't piss him off.
It's interesting. So I will tell that story in a future podcast. So that, you know, hopefully we'll get people to come in and want to listen. You never know.
I got a Charles Haley one that'll it's up there.
I was going to say, you know, Eddie didn't piss him off because he's still here to talk about it. Yeah. So, you know, Chuck Liddell off. Yeah. Yeah.
Eddie's a big boy. He's a little tough to move around.
Yeah. And, you know, and I did martial arts myself. I did mixed martial arts. And actually, when I was doing training, my instructor actually wanted me. He told me about the UFC and he wanted me to go do it.
Oh, really?
He said I had the talent to do it. And I'm like, yeah,
nice.
That's not for me, man. It's I'm about to get married. This is 1999. I go, I'm about to get married and I'm not that guy anymore. If you caught me 10 years ago, maybe. But
maybe.
Yeah. Not anymore. No, I'm not that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny when MMA came out, when it first started, I'm talking about UFC 1, you know, when it was like your karate versus my kung fu versus your pit fight,
whatever
it was they promoted. And at the time, I was working on Wall Street, and my manager was an ex-Green Beret.
No.
And the guy was a battlefield interrogator in Vietnam. So, you know, this guy had seen some shit, you know what I mean? And when I said, hey, let me show you this tape I got of this UFC. It's supposed to be no holds barred and all that. Yep. He says, yeah, that's for me. Let me see what's going on. And I just remember he took it home with him. A couple of days later, he comes back to the office, tosses me the tape, and he goes, I could kill all those guys with one hand.
What?
Like, he just came back. He was not impressed. He wasn't impressed with Hoist. He wasn't impressed with Shamrock. He wasn't impressed with Chemo. He wasn't like all those old dudes, you know, like, you know, he wasn't impressed with any of them. Who's the Dutch guy, the kickboxer? I forget his name right now.
Was one of the Gracies around then?
Yeah, he said Hoist.
Hoist was around. Yeah, UFC 1, UFC 2. Yeah, they were around back then. But back then it was like no weight classes, no rounds, no time limits. Groin strikes were legal. I think the only thing they outlawed was eye gouges. That was the only rule they had. But everything else, like kick to the groin was legal. Everything was legal, man. I think the first five or so were under those rules. And that's when, like, McCain introduced that bill to ban it. And that's why it got banned in a lot of places. You couldn't see UFC until they made it more like boxing. That's when the Fertittas took over and Dana White took over, you know. Yeah. But it just struck me as funny that that guy was like 5'6" if he was that tall, you know. And he just told me, he said, like, he goes, I could kill them, like, with one hand, especially with no holds bar. I'll kill them with one hand. And I was like, oh, come on, because, you know, I'm 6'3", you know, like, back then I used to be a solid 275. And I was like, come on, Joe, you could have taken them. He goes, and he said to me, John, you go, we had a corporate gym. He goes, come upstairs to the gym with me. Give me half an hour and I'll show you. like he goes, I'll put you on your head. He goes, you don't understand, man. We don't mess around in the Green Berets, you know.
No, it's like kidding.
We'll get it done in 10 minutes, man. We don't have time to mess around. He goes, a big guy like you, I'll have you tied up like a pretzel before you know it. I was like, I believe you. No need to show me, you know.
No kidding. I wonder what they learn, what they teach them.
Honestly, he never got into it, but it's literally one of those things that, like, I think there's no such thing as rules for those guys. Like, they'll poke you in the eye, they'll rip out your eyeball, they'll grab you by the nose. Yeah. They know all the
pressure points.
The pressure points, the nerve bundles and everything. Yeah. And they don't have any mercy. They'll just be like, they'll never give up. And they know all the chokeholds. Because I showed them, like, okay, here's how a rare, you know, I could do a rear naked choke, you know. Yeah. And I just lightly put it around his neck. And I said, and he goes, oh, yeah, that's a simple one. That's a Japanese strangle. He goes, have you ever seen the one where I could make you unconscious with just my shoulder? I was like, wait, what? You know? And he just put me in a hold and he took his shoulder blade and he put it right up against the carotid and he had the other one, you know, like with my head tilted over. And I was like, okay, I tapped out. I was like, okay, I'm falling asleep. It took like 30 seconds. You know
what
I mean?
That's a trip. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but not to get too off the topic, but yeah, man, like those days were nuts. So when you tell me someone told you could have been, he wanted you to go to UFC. That means to me you're pretty badass back then. So like,
he wanted me to train for it. You know, I was kind of natural at it because I had taken other martial arts prior to that, and everybody saw I was kind of natural. Like, man, you'd be good at it, man. We should train you. I'm like, it's not for me, man. 10 years ago, maybe, but not now. I'm getting married. I'm not on me anymore, bro. Yeah,
that's code for the wife wouldn't allow it. So
yeah, pretty much.
Once we get through the fog and everything, that's really what he's saying.
The thing is, I already have a career that, you know, pays pretty well. So it's like,
I'm
not going to do that.
I need both ears.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want them cauliflower ears. They're not good for sales.
yeah.
All right, guys. Let me get to this part of the show that I call silly questions. So I'm going to ask you 5 questions. Both of you can take a shot answering. There's no right or wrong answers. This is just to get us to know you a little bit, okay?
All right.
Question 1. You're flipping channels on TV or your streamer, whichever's modern.
Yes.
What's the one movie that if you click on it, you're not coming off of it? No matter where it is, you got to sit and watch it till the end. Let's start out with Anthony.
Oh, Rocky. Hands down, Rocky. Yes.
Can't move away from Rocky.
Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 or 7. Not 5.
There you go.
Anyone but 5. No Tommy Gunn for me. I mean, there's a lot of movies, like Shawshank Redemption is one that I won't turn off. Godfather 2 is one that I mean, there's a lot, but to me, my guilty pleasure is Rocky. There's something about that song when he starts working out, just like, oh man, you gotta be going.
Cool. Rocky. Eddie, how about you?
You know, he already mentioned a few of them already. I mean, anytime Godfather 1, Godfather 2 is on, I'm watching it. And the primary reason is because I catch something new almost every time I watch it. Yeah. And it's a very complex movie, something that I enjoy. I really enjoy another movie that I really liked is Shawshank Redemption. It's one of my top 5 of all time. I also enjoy, and not that I enjoy it, I think it's a very well-written movie, was Schindler's List. I watched that. It's kind of, you know, morbid a little bit just because of the show that, you know, what it was depicting, but it's just a well-made movie. You know, if that comes on, you don't see it on that often, but if that comes on, I'll watch it. So yeah, there's a bunch of, like, a lot of the classics, man. I mean, honestly, most of these movies that I just talked about, if they're on, Goodfellas is another one. I like the mafia type movies, right? Goodfellas is another one I watched. Maybe the first half of it, because that's the best part. The second half is kind of eh, but yeah, those are the movies. The Departed, all these movies, yeah.
Cool, man. Excellent. All right. You're playing a game of horse. You have the opportunity to play a game of horse with one NBA player, dead or alive.
Whoa.
Who are you playing horse with? Eddie, you start out first.
That I could, you know, just to interact and or try and beat him.
It's a game of horse, man. Take it any way you want.
Fuck, man. I got to go with Steph Curry, man, honestly, because, I mean, he's incredible at how he shot. I could probably learn some things from him on how he shoots, right? So, and he's a good guy, you know, from what I've heard from people who have met him or seen him. I know Twan has seen him from afar. Yeah. I have another buddy of mine who's actually in our fantasy football league that actually played in the same golf club or the same golf course with him, and the, and Steph was in the group ahead of him, and they actually met right after the round, and he said he was a very down to earth, easygoing guy. So I would say Steph Curry.
Steph Curry for you, Anthony. Yep.
Man, I've been as he's talking, I'm thinking, I'm going through names in my head, and I'm, you know, I'd probably go with Chris Mullin.
Chris Mullin.
Yeah, yeah. He fascinates me in a lot of ways. You know, just a quick little preview. You know, he was an alcoholic when he first joined the league, and a lot of that was due to his parents passing and him being on the left coast, used to being in New York, and the way he overcame everything, the way that he became an all-star, and the fact that, I mean, I don't want to set this down like an insult, but he's so good yet athletically so limited, you know, and so I'm fascinated by him, and I would want to talk to him more about the way he views life as opposed to his basketball skills. So he's probably the guy that I would pick because he's a guy that I grew up watching and I think highly of in terms of what I know through the TV, right? I don't know him as a person,
right?
You know, but in terms of what I've seen and what I've read, he's one I'd like to have a conversation with.
All right. Sometime catch me off camera. I'll tell you my Chris Mullin story from here in New York. Very quick, but it's nothing for the air, but I'll let you guys know. All right. Third silly question. You guys are alone on a desert island. You get to bring one artist's music collection with you.
Oh, well,
I got it.
For the rest of time. Okay. I think we started with Eddie last time, so we'll go to Anthony now. Anthony, who's that artist you're bringing with you to the desert island?
And that can be a collective, right? Like a band or an individual.
Anything, just, okay. Artist, anything you want.
Man, so many to pick from, but I got to stay true. Tribe Called Quest.
Tribe Called Quest.
That's who I'm going to go with because I love almost everything they put out. And so that's going to be vast and a lot of variation there. So that's who I would go with, Tribe Called Quest.
There you go, Tribe Called Quest.
I'm going to go with a group that, in my opinion, is overlooked as one of the best bands of all time. Because anytime you hear the best bands of all time, you're always hearing about rock, right? Mm. You know, Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones, right? You know, name them, The Who, all these other classic rock bands, right? You always hear that's, you know, when you hear that band, that's what you gravitate to. That's what you hear. To me, it's Earth, Wind & Fire. So I think Earth, Wind & Fire is one of the best bands of all time. And that's who I would pick.
Yep, yeah, they got that funk, bro. You can't deny that.
Yep.
Okay.
How about you, John? I'm curious on this one.
What's your?
Yeah.
Well, like, I at heart, I'm a Ramones guy. From when I grew up, it's my era. It's New York music. I'm a born and bred New Yorker. You can't get it out of me. So it was definitely the Ramones. They also have like a 20-year catalog I could choose from.
Yeah.
But I will say one thing. If there was one band that comes very close for me, very, very close, it would be Rancid, who's a California band.
Yes.
You know, that came out of the punk revival in the mid 90s. But I, if you put a gun to my head, I would say the Ramones. Yeah, I'm a punk rock guy, aging punk rocker, which is a sad sight. But yeah, that's me.
Nice.
All right. Fourth question. And this one you might have to put your thinking caps. If you guys could either change any rule or add a new one to make the NBA a better game, what would it be? So I think this one goes to Eddie first because we went last time Anthony answered first.
I think because the three-pointer is already kind of obsolete, in my opinion, because everybody can do it. You already see these 3-on-3 tournaments have like 5-point shots and 4-point shots. I would say that if you can make a shot in a designated area that is farther than 3 and make it like, you know, a 5-point shot, that'd be cool. It's just different. But I know a lot of the traditionists wouldn't like it just because it's not traditional basketball. I think it'd be interesting. I mean, you're going to make it starts kind of making the brand of basketball kind of what you see worse, right? But it just makes the game interesting. So that's
more exciting. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you would add the multiple. You would add.
I just add one more extra longer shot
points.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anthony, what's your improvement to the NBA?
So this is one that is going to have a lot of ramifications, and we can talk about those ramifications. It's conversations I've actually had with my brother. So one of the things that bothers me about the NBA today is how the superstars move from team to team. And so one of the things that I would put in is I would keep the salary cap, but what I would do is I would change the cap to a lower number, but any player that a team drafts does not count against the cap. So no matter who you have, as long as you stay on that team, it doesn't count against the cap. If you, so you get maybe like instead of 120 million, maybe you get like a $50 million cap so you can bring someone over. But once that person leaves their team, they're a cap casualty no matter where they go, as opposed to staying on the team that they're at, where, you know, and you can figure out the money. Obviously, I don't want to make it where one player can make 200 million a year and another can make 30 million. But to me, that's what I would do. I would set it up so that teams that players that get drafted for a team are highly incentivized to stay on that team.
Interesting. Yeah, that I haven't heard that one before, but just off the top of my head, I could see where you need to put a lot of thought into that. Because like you said, there's a lot of number crunching. You have to see what the trends would be and whether you, the union would go for it. Because I could see where the union would be like, nah, man, we like this moving around because it causes bidding for players. But at the same time, it lets you keep superstars with no ramifications other than the salary if you've drafted them. So theoretically, I could see where someone drafts like a Wembanyama and they're like, hey, you're not leaving. Or Giannis in Milwaukee, you're not leaving because we're the ones who can pay you the most.
Right.
And we could do it forever. Like, so you could reach that $200 million a year, theoretically, if that's the value you have to your organization, right? That's an interesting one. That's a good one. I like that one.
I mean, just for a minute, visualize, at least for me, visualize if LeBron never left Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like he was, I think he would be better liked. I think he would be, people would think of him more highly than they do already.
Well, certainly the people in Cleveland would like him a lot.
Yes, absolutely. Imagine him and Kyrie, right? They're both Cleveland guys with Wiggins. Right. Right, I mean, those are guys that never got to play together, but under this rule, the odds are they would have.
All right, I like that. I like that. That's a sneaky one, Twan.
Yeah,
I like that one.
Yeah, he's talked to me about it before. That's why I went. I knew you were going to go there, man. That's why I didn't want to.
And this is for all the homies out there. You're on the same desert island, Eddie. You've got Earth, Wind, and Fire. Anthony, you've got Tribe Called Quest. Now, outside of your wives, because I don't want to get you in trouble with nobody.
Oh shit.
Who's the female you're bringing with you to spend time on that island?
I'll answer that one very easily, man.
Your wives can't get mad at you. I took them off the table.
Okay, so it's a known thing that one of my celebrity crushes has always been Sandra Bullock. Mm. My wife knows it, but I was not going to say her. What I was going to say is, if you ever watch, you know, the Univision or Telemundo, you'll pick
on rare occasion.
If you watch that every day, you'll pick someone different, man. So, so I'm going to say any, I'll watch a week's worth of Univision or Telemundo and I'll pick a girl every day from that freaking channel. That's who I pick.
and then you wait for, was it Sabato Gigante? And you get
Sabato Gigante,
Francisco.
Don Francisco, and you get one of those weather girls that dances around a lot.
It's so a no. The producers are genius on those shows, man. They're genius.
So seriously, you want one of those nice,
any of them.
Thick Latina girls.
Right? Any of them, man. You just any of them.
Yep. It's a cheat, but I'll let you get away with that.
Yeah, Eddie always seems to work that system to his advantage. I'm gonna be honest. I haven't seen her lately, but my girl when I was growing up was Daisy Fuentes from.
Oh yeah,
Daisy Fuentes.
Yes, yes. If she looks anything like she looked before, you know.
This is fantasy, Twan. So you get Daisy Fuentes when she was young, the way you remember her. She hasn't aged.
I am
for
good.
For purposes of this experimentation.
All right. Then I'm a happy man.
You get her the way you remember her, man.
Yeah. Hey, Gail and Patty, if you're listening, sorry. You know, we're this question. And it's a fantasy thing, so sorry, right?
Yeah, blame Big John for that question. I already took your husband off the hook. Who is it, Patty and?
Gail. Patty's my wife. Gail is Twan's wife.
Patty and Gail, it's not your husband's fault. Blame Big John on that one. Better yet, blame William Del Pilar. That way none of us are on the hook. That's the best one.
There you go.
Blame the Panameño.
All right. Thank you, guys. I enjoyed this conversation. I hope you guys did as well. Yeah, and for fun. The fans out there, I can't emphasize enough. Go check out Buzzer Beaters. Go check out Buzzer Beaters. I don't care if you check out Buzzer Beaters and you don't watch this show. Go watch Buzzer Beaters because that's the show you want to go to, especially if you're a Hoops fan. But if you just want to see two guys who have a lifelong history together, who have great conversations, good topics, and it's just fun to listen to, go check out Buzzer Beaters every Wednesday for a new podcast episode. Every Wednesday, Buzzer Beaters. And where can you find them? Grumblingsmedia.com. Grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find us on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere you could think of, at Grumblings Media, all one word. Until next time, Eddie, thank you so much. Anthony, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And everybody else, this is Big John signing off. Until next time, peace out, everybody.
Peace.